Welcome back to the Brittany Hughes Show, everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Drugs are bad, okay? In case you didn't already know, drugs are bad. Turns out decriminalizing drugs, also a pretty bad idea. I hate to be Captain States the obvious, but it turns out that telling people that they can do drugs openly and out on the street in public without getting arrested doesn't lead to much good. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, well, of course it doesn't. That's a perfectly logical statement. Of course, telling people that they can't just shoot up on the street corner and not be arrested and not be penalized, of course that would lead to bad things. It took the state of Oregon 4 years to figure this out. I kid you not. So this stems back to 2020. 2020. In all fairness, everything was going insane in 2020. Maybe people just lost their mind. I hate to give too much credence though, because it is Oregon and they do tend to do a whole bunch of stupid things out there. In 2020, the Oregon State Legislature passed a bill that decriminalized possession of small quantities of drugs. So as long as you've got, you know, just a little bit of drugs. And if you were caught with these drugs, users had the option, instead of getting arrested, because we're not going to arrest them anymore, right? This is a disorder. This is a disease. They cannot be held responsible for their own actions. This isn't something that they chose to do. This is something that is happening to them. And we cannot penalize someone for that, right? We can't criminalize that. We certainly don't want to marginalize any certain segments of society. So instead of arresting them, they had the option to either pay a $100 fine or receive a health assessment through an addiction recovery center. This is under the 2020 measure. So this was passed by the Oregon State Legislature, and it was actually voted on by Oregon residents, 58% of whom supported the measure. So we were perfectly okay out in Oregon with people just shooting up on the sidewalk because, again, can't hold them responsible for their own actions, and we can't call them criminals and we can't incarcerate them. We have to get them into treatment. And this is apparently the harebrained way they decided to do it. Here was the problem, though, as if all of that wasn't bad enough, as if that wasn't just stupid on its face. The bill explicitly stated that there would be no penalty for failing to pay that $100. So that kind of renders it a moot point, right? If you hand somebody a traffic ticket and say, hey, you know, here's your traffic ticket, but if you don't show up to pay it, nothing's actually going to happen. How many people do you think are going to pay the traffic ticket? Zero, right? I mean, logic would dictate. Turns out that's exactly what happens when you give people a citation for doing drugs. So, All of these citations, the cops stop arresting people, right? You can't arrest anybody anymore for doing drugs. So instead, they start handing out these $100 citations that don't get paid, because why would you? And virtually nobody self-admits for this treatment, because why would you? Again, when there's no penalty for doing so. You've got your citation and you don't pay it and you go on with your life shooting up in the town square on the, you know, sidewalk in front of the elementary school or whatever. And this little hotline that they set up that people were supposed to call into for treatment, that goes virtually unused for 4 years because, again, why in the world would you? Addicts don't like to admit that they're addicted, and nobody's going to pay $100 if they don't have to, not to mention that's not a whole lot of money to begin with. So this whole entire thing is rendered completely useless from the get-go. And it's just taxpayer money that's being wasted here. And over the following months and then years, what people start to see on the streets of Portland in particular, but also in other parts of Oregon, is just open drug use, shocking exactly nobody, except for apparently the 58% of Oregonians who voted for this crap because they thought that it was going to help because somebody, I don't know, they just lost their mind. Drug addicts in Portland started using drugs and even overdosing right out there in the open. Because again, why would you hide your illicit drug use if you're not actually going to get arrested? Businesses started hiring private security to deal with the problem. And some ordinary residents even started carrying Narcan with them just in case they came across somebody overdosing. So now we've got what was already a garbage dump in Oregon and places like Portland, now it is a garbage dump on fire. And it takes this idiotic state 4 years to figure out that telling people that they can shoot up or snort coke or whatever, smoke meth right out there on the streets is a bad idea. And all of a a sudden, just like that. Support for this measure drops like a rock. Remember the 58% that supported it back in 2020? By August of 2023, 56% said they opposed it. It only took 4 years of watching people overdosing for them to figure this out. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So then this past Monday, Governor Tina Kotek signed a bill that recriminalized those drugs, and they just sort of reversed all of this. This legalization experiment absolutely failed. But it took people overdosing on the streets in full view of the public for the numbskulls there in Oregon to realize that maybe telling people it's perfectly okay to do drugs on the street might actually result in a problem. Who thinks this stuff makes sense? It boggles the mind that anybody could look at something like this and actually think that it was a good idea. It's kind of like when California raised the limit for felony larceny to almost $1,000, from a few hundred bucks to $1,000. And then everybody seemed shocked. When criminals started busting into stores and making off with armfuls of loot. When theft shot through the roof. When businesses started fleeing because it wasn't feasible to stay open. They couldn't stay in business. They were losing too much money. And there's California trying to figure out what to do about their crime problem that they have aided and abetted with their idiotic policies. Did you think that telling criminals they could commit more crime was going to result in less crime? I mean, it's baffling to me. Speaking of drugs and things that are bound to backfire, here's another one for you. Every single day I come across stories like this and I think, oh my gosh, that can't possibly be true. Somebody reported that incorrectly. There's no way that possibly happened. And then you cross-check it against a couple of other sources and you realize, darn, turns out people can be that stupid. The Mass General Brigham Hospital System in Massachusetts is making a massive change to its policy. And it's going to impact their youngest patients. So this is the Mass General Brigham Hospital System. It comprises at least 4 facilities that include obstetrics and gynecology wards. This is the Massachusetts General Hospital, Brigham and Women's Hospital, Newton Wesley Hospital, and Salem Hospital. So at least 4 facilities. And the hospital system now says they will no longer report suspected abuse or neglect to the state solely because a newborn tests positive for drugs after birth. Let me repeat that in case you think that your ears just deceived you. A baby can be born in this hospital system with drugs in their system, and the hospital will no longer report to the state suspected abuse or neglect. Instead, here's what the hospital says their new policy will be. They will now require written consent before conducting any drug test on the pregnant mother or the newborn, and they will only order the test if they say the results could change a doctor's medical approach to their care. So the test is not going to be ordered just because they suspect that a pregnant woman might be high or that a baby might be born with drugs in their system, which can be fatal to a newborn, which can result in permanent damage and health consequences for a newborn. But you can't just suspect that a patient might be high or have illicit drugs in their system. You now have to believe that it would change the doctor's medical approach to their care. And you also have to obtain written consent from the mother, which can be rejected. Now, even if you get all of that, right? Even if the doctor says, look, we need to test this lady for drugs. This could actually change how we approach this. Even if she gives consent, the hospital also says that just because a baby is born with drugs in their system, that does not mean that they will automatically report suspected abuse or neglect to the state. In fact, the new policy states that substance exposure alone, including evidence that the baby had been exposed to opioids, apparently, will no longer be immediately reported to the state welfare agencies unless there are other separate concerns that the baby is abused or neglected. I'm sorry. Hold on just a second. As a mother of 2, having carried and birthed 2 children, you're telling me that using drugs that you were not prescribed that are not safe for pregnancy. Again, we're not talking about a Tylenol here, right? We're not talking about a drug that you were prescribed by a doctor while you were pregnant that is safe for a pregnant woman and the baby she's carrying. We're talking about illicit substance. We're talking about opioids. We're talking about hard drug. We're talking about things you should not be taking and know you should not be taking or using while pregnant. That doesn't constitute as abuse or neglect. You are knowingly and willingly putting the life of your baby, the health of your baby, not to mention your own, but in particular, your unborn child who has no say in the matter, you are putting their health and their life at risk. I would say that falls pretty darn well within the scope of abuse and neglect. It also raises serious questions about your ability to be a parent to this child if you are willing to expose them to substances before they even take their first free breath. I would say that constitutes as a suspected abuse and neglect. But here's the problem, and here's why the hospital says that it's changing its policy. And this tells you pretty much all you need to know about their motivations and about what they are prioritizing over the health and the potential life of this newborn. Mass General Brigham said that the move is to address the, quote, racial and ethnic inequities that are present in healthcare, claiming that substance abuse disorder in the context of pregnancy, i.e. pregnant women using drugs they should not be using, disproportionately affects Black individuals. The hospital said studies show that Black pregnant people, they say Black pregnant people, right? It's women. Only women get pregnant. Let's be honest here. But Black pregnant people are more likely to be drug tested and reported to welfare agencies than white women. I don't really care. Can I just throw that out there? I'm so entirely sick of racial inequities or whatever that means, whatever subjective label you want to slap on something being used to justify all kinds of harebrained garbage. I don't care who or what segment of society may be disproportionately affected by a policy that says that if a nurse or a medical practitioner believes that you may be using illicit substances while pregnant that may be harming the health and well-being of your child, and that a baby may have been born with drugs in their system that they might need to be treated for, I don't really care who you say that may or may not be disproportionately affecting. If it's a simple truth that a baby is born with drugs in their system, it does not matter one whit to me whether that happens to be a white mother, a Black mother, an Asian mother, a Hispanic mother, or any other kind of mother. And I really don't care whether the data suggests that certain segments of society tend to use drugs while pregnant more than others. That's on you as a mom. That's on you as a parent. All that matters in that moment is the health and the well-being and the life of that child. And also, by the way, treating the mother for a drug problem that she clearly has, if it's so bad that you are using while pregnant. But apparently this hospital cares more about preserving its racial inequity stance, making sure that nobody feels disproportionately targeted, than they do about the newborns being birthed in their hospital. Dr. Sarah Wakeman, who's the senior medical director for substance use disorder at Mass General Brigham, actually went on the record as stating that, quote, the goal here is balancing the safety of infants and families, and that a positive toxicology test does not tell you anything about someone's ability to parent. Are you kidding me? It tells me an awful lot about your ability to parent if you are willing to put your child's life and health at risk because you cannot put down the crack pipe or the pill bottle long enough to grow and birth your child. If you cannot care about them enough to protect them from the very harm that you are choosing to do to yourself and now to them unwittingly because they can't do anything but suffer from it, right? They don't have a choice. That tells me an awful lot about your ability to parent from the get-go. But of course, none of this is about protecting children. None of this is about protecting babies. None of this is about actually caring for people and medically treating people, right? any more than transgenderism, right? Any more than treating gender dysphoria and the absolute insanity that we have normalized in our society and in our medical system that now mutilates people in the name of a mental illness rather than getting them the help that they need. In Scotland, they'll now arrest you for misgendering a trans person. As long as that trans person says that they feel targeted, that is now a crime for you to simply state the truth that a man is a man and a woman is a woman. Over here in the United States, the White House is, of course, declaring a transgender day of visibility for trans people, coinciding with Easter Sunday, the holiest holiday on the Christian calendar. And you've got the Biden White House making it all about transgender people, making it all about their day of visibility. It's not a mental illness. It's not a condition that a person that is suffering from it needs to be treated for. No. We've got to not only normalize it, but we've got to slap it over Easter, which of course Joe Biden now claims he didn't do because he doesn't even know what day of the week it is on any given day. Doesn't even know that he's president half the time. Can't remember who his wife is. Can't remember anything in his own history. Can't remember when his own son died or of what. This man can't remember diddly squat. Now he says that, I didn't do that over Easter. Meanwhile, while all of that is going on over here in reality land, you've got transgender people actually suffering from a mental illness. And by the way, it's not actually transgender people because you cannot successfully transition your gender. There's no such thing as a transgender person. There are people suffering from gender dysphoria. People with a mental illness in need of compassionate treatment, many of them having been abused and sexually assaulted, but we can't talk about that because the left is too busy being compassionate and loving to do anything to actually help anybody. And we know this. We know this. One study in 2021 that looked into disparities in childhood abuse between transgender and so-called cisgender adolescents. Cisgender, that's liberal speak for normal people who identify with their biological gender. It's not an actual word. Cisgender just means not transgender, essentially. But again, we've got to label everything because everybody's got to fall into some category. So this 2021 study found that transgender adolescents between the ages of 14 and 18 exhibit disproportionate levels of mental health problems compared with non-transgender teenagers. The study found that 73% of transgender teens reported psychological abuse, 39% reported physical abuse, and 19% reported sexual abuse. This is a common theme, by the way. Multiple studies have shown that the so-called transgender population, people suffering from gender dysphoria, are at a much higher rate of having experienced sexual abuse, particularly early on in their lives. Compared with heterosexual, non-transgender teenagers, according to this study, transgender teenagers had higher odds of psychological abuse, physical abuse, and sexual abuse. Risks for psychological abuse were highest among transgender individuals who were born female. And the study noted that in the future, researchers should examine how much more frequent experiences of abuse during childhood could contribute to disproportionate mental health problems observed within transgender adolescents. I.e., we need to look at the link between this here. It needs to be more fully understood how abuse, particularly in early childhood, is linked to gender dysphoria in teenagers and young adults. Except, see, we can't wonder whether gender dysphoria is the direct result of trauma and abuse, particularly sexual abuse, which can have horrific effects on children and teens, and in particular can literally become hardwired into their development. We're not allowed to question, right, whether gender dysphoria is the result of a mental illness triggered by trauma and not a legitimate identity that someone is just born with, despite there being a pretty clear link between trauma and abuse and gender dysphoria. We're not allowed to talk about that. We're not allowed to ask about that because this isn't really about learning the truth, right? This isn't about figuring out what's causing people to experience this break from reality or helping people who are clearly suffering from a self-destructive mental condition that makes them want to, in some cases, mutilate their own body. But we see this play out time and time again. And the left loves to hold up transgender people, people with gender dysphoria, as some heroic segment of society and completely ignore the trauma that so often got them there, because it's more politically expedient to do so. And then we have stories like this. Do you remember last month, Nex Benedict? That name ring a bell? This is the 16-year-old who got in a fight with some kids at her school, and then she passed away a day later. And at first, that was all we knew about this story. This was a 16-year-old high school student. She considered herself non-binary. She got in a fight with some other girls in a bathroom at her local high school, and she died the next day. And that is all that it took for the left to absolutely run with this story. Well, she was being bullied because she was non-binary. She was being picked on because of who she was. She was simply trying to express herself and live out her truth. And she got bullied by some kids, and they beat the snot out of her in a bathroom. And she died from this fight. And she was essentially beaten to death by a bunch of probably, you know, MAGA hat wearing Trumpkin kids from conservative households who, you know, slammed her head into the, you know, toilet rim, and she died. Except that none of that happened. None of that happened whatsoever. We later learned, as is so often the case, that the facts did not fit the narrative. The fight was a relatively minor one. She told the police that she wasn't actually sure that the girls in the bathroom were picking on her. She thought they might have been because they were over in the corner laughing. She suspected that they were laughing at her. There's no actual evidence that they were. She goes and she splashes water on them, which is what prompted the fight in the first place. The fight ended up being relatively minor. It was broken up within moments by a faculty member that was standing outside of the bathroom. All of the students got sent to the nurse's office. Nobody was injured. No police were called. No one was sent for medical attention. Parents were notified. And then Nex Benedict, this non-binary 16-year-old student who was apparently the victim of bullying, gets to the hospital. Her parents voluntarily take her to the hospital. She tells police her side of the story, which did not match the media narrative that had already come out as gospel truth, according to the left. And then the next day, police respond to a call from her mother that she is unresponsive in their home. And it turns out, after toxicology reports come back several weeks later, that she passed away of a drug overdose and a suspected suicide. Essentially, she took a crap load of Benadryl and died. It was horrific. It was tragic. But before the toxicology reports had even come out, right, before we even knew exactly what happened, the White House was already preparing a statement that this young lady was a victim of bullying, that she was targeted by students who harassed her and beat her because of her gender identity, that this is what transgender people go through every day of their lives. This whole statement comes out, this whole narrative that did not at all match the facts. There is no evidence whatsoever that this young lady passed away from results of a fight or from the results of bullying. Her name, by the way, is not Nex Benedict. We now have more details on this case that have slowly started to trickle out, and you're not going to hear them from the news media because they even further don't fit the narrative that has been pushed about this young lady. Her name was not Nex Benedict. Her name was Dagny. And it turns out there is a lot more to her story. On March 17th, a reporter named Jeremy Lee Quinn unveiled court documents showing that she had been subjected to horrific sexual abuse by her father, her own biological father, for years as a young child. Red State confirmed all of this. They had court documents posted on their website regarding Dagny Benedict's father's case. His name was James Everett Hughes. He was arrested in 2019, and he was charged with rape of a minor under the age of 14 for an incident that occurred in 2017 when Dagny would have been 9 years old. According to the case documents, Dagny Benedict told investigators at the time that her father had molested her for years before anally raping her when she was 9 years old. Now, most media outlets have not mentioned this, including those that have posted updates on this case. They have not mentioned these details, which are extremely pertinent. The Washington Post published that Dagny's father was in prison for abuse at the time of her funeral, but did not post any of the details of the case, what he was arrested for, or the fact that his own daughter was apparently his victim and a victim of sexual abuse. This is a young lady who was raped by her own father before puberty. And maybe, just maybe, if the left were actually as compassionate as they say, if they were actually about helping people struggling with gender dysphoria instead of just profiting off of them and using them as political props, then children like Dagny Benedict would not have fallen through the cracks. Maybe we could actually help kids suffering from the trauma of abuse if we weren't so busy validating the very, you know, effects of that trauma, like it's some sort of legitimate, praiseworthy condition or valid identity. Because if validating gender dysphoria and helping people transition to another gender, which is not actually possible, and there's a reason for that, because it's not biologically sound, it's not anatomically reasonable. But if this whole system the left has concocted actually worked, then why is it that so many people who've been put through it come out the other side with higher levels of mental health problems, higher risks of suicide, transition regret, deep physical, mental, and emotional trauma? Please tell me why that is. There is no evidence whatsoever that this young lady died as a result of a fight or because of bullying from other students. There is, however, a pile of evidence suggesting that this was a highly disturbed girl who had been abused in the most horrific way possible by the person she should have been able to trust the most to protect her. She was carrying the trauma of one of the most awful experiences that a human child can endure. And she was suffering an identity crisis that was likely born out of that trauma and out of having experienced sexual experiences, not only from her own father, which is just vile beyond the telling of it, but also at the age of 9, when her brain was nowhere close to being able to process what had happened in any sort of way, much less a healthy or reasonable way. So now here she is. She doesn't know who she is or what she's supposed to be. And at the ripe old age of 16, this clearly disturbed little girl who had been failed at every single level takes her own life. And the only thing that the left can talk about is her gender identity, because that makes her a martyr. That makes her a hero. It doesn't. She was suffering. She had been suffering long before this. And the left wants us to believe it was all because of transphobia and bullying. And they will throw this young lady and all the other children like her, all the other teens, all the adults suffering right along with her. They all get thrown under the bus because the narrative is more important than actually identifying the root of this problem and how to help people who are suffering from it. This is the problem with leftism. We see it in their approach to gender dysphoria and this rush to affirm everyone who identifies as something other than the way they were born. Whether it's children suffering psychological trauma from sexual abuse or a man who, for whatever reason, wants to mutilate himself. Here was another one just this week. An Ontario man who is referred to in court documents only as KS is now seeking to undergo a vaginoplasty while also keeping his biological penis intact. This is a new one. So this is at a gender-affirming hospital in Austin, Texas. Gender-affirming, right? If you really wanted to affirm someone's gender, you would help them come to terms with the body in which they were born, but we can't do that, right? So now we gotta, you know, this is gender-affirming, right? Whatever gender you want to be, we're going to affirm that, regardless of whether it actually makes any sense or is based in science whatsoever. So this Ontario man, KS, has found this hospital in Texas, in Austin, that will apparently do a vaginoplasty, which is essentially the creation of an artificial vagina in a biological male, while also keeping the penis that he was born with perfectly intact. And here's the problem. He wants his Ontario-based insurance to pay for the procedure. This is where the issue comes in. KS here says he presents more as a female, but he doesn't feel fully female, hence why he wants to keep his penis. So he wants the vagina, but he doesn't want to get rid of the part of him that's male because he doesn't feel fully female. He thinks he's kind of this somewhere nebulous in between, right? So he requested this procedure back in 2022, and he filed it with the Ontario Health Insurance Plan, the tax-subsidized health insurance plan that he's got up there in Canada, but they denied his request because they kind of, you know, under their system, you got to have a one or the other. It's not that they won't pay for a man to have the vaginoplasty. He just, you know, that's not a true gender reassignment, right? You can't have both. You got to get rid of one before you can get the other. They'll pay for that. That's perfectly fine. But they don't have a place in their system to fit somebody who wants both. That's this little niche category of somebody who's not really sure what they want to be, right? So he can get the procedure done, but the insurance won't fund it. So he's actually gone to court to force them and all the Canadian taxpayers that pay into this system to fund this surgery. He's 33 years old. He's apparently struggled with his identity, he says, since he was a teenager, and does not completely align with either the male or female genders. It just keeps getting wilder and wilder, doesn't it? It's weird enough when you've got a man who says, look, I want to get rid of this. I want to chop this off and I want to drill a hole here. And you're kind of thinking, my gosh, that doesn't make any sense. That's absolutely crazy. Or it cannot get crazier than that. And behold, it does. His doctor said, quote, this is an actual doctor. This is somebody that went to medical school. This is somebody with degrees on the wall, right? This is what this is somebody that's guilty of mutilation and abuse and should be absolutely stripped of their legal right to practice medicine. His doctor said, quote, it is very important for KS to have a vagina for her personal interpretation of her gender expression, but she also wishes to maintain her penis. Her penis. You guys, the words that I find myself speaking sometimes, it's like we have just entered the absolute twilight zone. And so this is the debate. This is the debate over whether or not an insurance policy has to fork out the money for this mutilating procedure. This is a delusion. This is an absolute delusion. And anybody who doesn't see this as a delusion is off their nut. And anybody that wants to mutilate themselves in this regard is suffering from a mental illness that requires extreme care. But see, this is what the left does. They validate this as normal because they can use these suffering people as political props for their own gain, to seize more and more control over society, to seize more and more control over a system, to convince people that their policies, their methods, their platform is the compassionate one that cares. That's what all of this comes down to, right? You see it in every single one of their policies. This is the commonality. The left's entire platform is based in this faux notion of compassion. We see it in their approach to drugs and okaying drugs and drug use to the point of people overdosing on the street and the rest of the public having to schlep around with, you know, Narcan in their pockets just in case they come across some dude frothing at the mouth outside of a McDonald's. Because that's their normal now. Or hey, there's a baby who's just been born with cocaine in their system, but we're not going to report it because we don't want people to think we're racist. That's the important thing here. We see it in leftists' approach to crime, where we'll just, you know, decriminalize everything and do away with cash bail, and we'll raise the standard for theft so that things can just fly under the radar. And now we've got kids as young as 11 carjacking people in DC every 5 minutes. But instead of dealing with that, leftists will blame the car manufacturers for making vehicles just too darn easy to steal. You can't boot squatters, you know, because they just need a roof over their heads like everybody else. And if that roof happens to be the one that you pay for, well, you suck, because no one should have multiple properties anyway. So really, that's on you. We're going to make it easier for the squatter to steal your property. Illegal immigration? That's fine. We'll just let whoever come into this country whenever. And we'll overload our welfare system with people who can't support themselves. And we'll pump millions of children into our tax-funded schools that are already failing. And they can't speak the language and their grades behind their age level. But it's fine, because compassion. All these things, all these harebrained policies, the left's entire platform is predicated on their ability to convince you that this whole thing is compassionate. Their whole agenda is the compassionate one, the inclusive one, the one that gives people a chance, that allows for mistakes, the one that makes sure we don't hold anyone accountable for their actions because it's not really their fault anyway. Their entire platform is based on their ability to make you feel guilty for having standards and expectations and for holding to the truth. The left cannot base any of their garbage on facts or logic or math or science. None of it adds up. Giving a pass to criminals results in more crime. Aiding someone in their mental illness and ignoring the trauma that led to it does not help that person. It drives them deeper into self-hatred and despair. It does not get them the care that they need to become a healthy, functional person. We have seen that time and time again. Telling pregnant women that it's okay to do drugs while you're pregnant because nobody's going to report you anyway, that does not help her. It certainly doesn't help her baby. It doesn't help the black community, or any other community for that matter. Blowing the gates off the border for rampant illegal immigration, that doesn't help migrants. That doesn't help immigrants. It doesn't help Americans. It certainly doesn't help the victims of illegal alien crime. Didn't help Lake and Riley. It doesn't even help the illegal aliens who've been encouraged to put their lives and, you know, their children's lives on the line to get to America, where they're raped and murdered and drowned in the process, only to get here and get shoved into some filthy, crime-ridden homeless shelter in New York City or, you know, some hotel, and they can't support themselves. None of this is logical. None of this holds up under its own weight. As we saw in Oregon, These policies, these programs, the entire way of approaching the world and human life like this, it implodes under its own insanity. It's like a supernova of idiocy. It just sucks everyone into this black hole of despair and confusion. Nobody's better for it. None of it's logical. None of it is true. So instead, the left has to convince people that it's compassionate, right? Don't run the numbers. Don't do the math. Don't bother with the science. Don't think about whether any of it is sustainable or helpful. Don't study the results. Don't get to the root of the problem. Just feel in your heart that this is compassionate. We care about people. We want to make them feel better. We don't want them to feel judged or oppressed or that they are in any way wrong. We care. Except here's the problem. Lying to people isn't caring. Setting them up for failure and misery isn't caring. Enabling them in their crime and their bad life choices isn't caring. It certainly isn't caring about all the other people who wind up suffering right along with them, because now we're all being forced to go along with this idiocy by mandate. None of this is compassionate. It's not compassionate to the individual, and it's not compassionate to society at large. None of this makes anything better. All it ever does is benefit the elites at the top that use it to seize power, that use it to get richer, that use it to consolidate governmental control, that now infects all of our lives. Do you feel cared about yet? Do you feel cared about? The same policies, the same side of the aisle, the same Democrat Party that pushes all of this garbage, is the same exact party that has driven up inflation, The same exact party that is attempting to limit what you buy through their green energy policies. The same party that is driving up the cost of gas that you put in your car, that is making it more difficult for you to feed your family, that is making it more difficult for you to purchase a house. The same exact policies, the same exact people that supposedly care so much are the same exact ones that are pushing the policies that are adversely affecting each and every one of us in our daily lives. How much can they possibly care? I certainly don't feel cared about. I'm willing to bet you don't either. And with that, that's the Brittany Hughes Show for today. Thank you for joining me. I hope you'll be back with me next Thursday. In the meantime, head over to the Brittany Hughes Show on Apple Podcasts. Hit the subscribe button so you will never miss an episode. You can also subscribe to the Newsbusters podcast over there. That one's on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays with Tim Graham. We've got lots of content for you to load up on your phone to listen to and from work, picking up your kids from school, the grocery store, where you can drop more money for less food. Thanks, Joe Biden. In the meantime, I hope you guys have a fantastic weekend and a blessed week ahead. I'll see you back here next Thursday.